I'm Alex Hirsch, and I'm Alex Hirsch.
I'm Mike Rianda. I was the creative director on this episode.
As you were on all of them. Hi, it's Rob Renzetti. I'm the supervising producer.
What is a supervising producer, Rob?
It's whatever you make of it, Alex.
That's true. Rob was sort of like our, like, just like
Sherpa.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
I was gonna say Obi-Wan Kenobi.
But yeah, I was gonna say Show Butler, but Show
How dare you?
Yeah. It would be like
Rob, fetch us a solution to everything.
Oh, okay, that's better. Like, I like that.
And you always had an answer.
Thank you.
This scene where Stan removes that and there's a trap door back there. Mm-hmm. We actually remembered this from when we go to Tale of Two Stands and we cut to the past and Ford has a completely different manner. You see the trapdoor and you see that in the background. Mm-hmm. Like, we did everything we could make this connect.
Was that Ian's idea or where did that come from?
I think I had been waiting. I thought it was such a cool idea that he said, like, where's the trapdoor? Like, gags like that, like, stick in my... I'm like, we have to have a trapdoor now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I love trapdoors and secret panels and the haunted house kind of stuff. Thurup has an improv line in here that is one of probably the hardest I laugh in this entire episode is it's coming up.
Is it where he's talking to his
or says, "Come here, hon, I need your arms."
Yeah, it's amazing.
Here it is. Wait for it.
Take it lightly. Come here, hon, I need your arms.
that is the magic of Thurup right there, where it's like he so embodies this character that
he,
like,
doesn't need to think about what Gideon would say. It's just whatever he was.
I would always do after we got a main take from Thurup, like, let's just do some improv takes. Yeah. Let's just goof around. And it's so funny because Thurup is such a sweet guy. He's so humble, and he would be genuinely nervous before the sessions.
Yeah,
you know, I'd be like, I'm not sure if I'm good enough, and you've got Kristen Schaal, and she's amazing. And then he'd get back there, and it would just be like, boom, like every line, so funny, good.
He was also like, he had his own show, so he knew how to improv within the scene as opposed to like bebopping and scatting like, oh, also, there's a yak off screen. You know, he would always have his improvs be like right on point.
Very
and
personality
always
based.
Hilarious.
So, Little Dipper, this episode did come from like a real life observation, which is that I remember when I was in sixth grade, I was literally the shortest kid in class. Like, they did a thing where they're like, let's figure out who the shortest kid is and the tallest kid.
Who would do that? That's a horrible teacher you had.
But he still is. He's 4 foot tall.
Line them all up.
He's on 12 phone books right now.
Guys, lower my voice, lower the pitch.
So in sixth grade, like, that. So, like, a lot of the Dipper Wendy stuff literally comes from, like, in sixth grade, I was paired up in a table group with Kirsten Johnson, who, was like a normal person. She was, like, normal person height, and I was like this little tiny munchkin, and I was, like, in love with her, and I remember being, like, why would the universe do this? Why would the universe give me a brain to fall in love trapped in this little tiny baby body? And I remember that Ariel, me and my sister, had always been the same height all throughout elementary school. In sixth grade, she grew like half an inch taller than me. And it was like the worst day of my life. I was like, what cruel universe would do this?
Now, did she continue to increase that difference? Did she keep
Absolutely
growing?
Absolutely not. No.
Literally,
a month later, the puberty train finally came to the station. Right. I became a normal person, and I tower
I'm
over her
to
now.
Hear you didn't have to suffer for too long.
Yeah.
I said that's good. Well, I don't know.
That's good.
I'm
that's
sorry.
Good. Yeah. No. I mean, it's whatever.
Ariel, you're a delight.
She's the best.
But your height is not important to me.
I remember. I was trying to think
as
about
long as
like
you're shorter than Alex.
I guess.
I was trying to think about these things that I remembered from childhood that were like dumb little childhood insecurities. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I remember when I was that age where I was like, because we would mark our height on the wall every year, right? So I was like, okay, here's a little nucleus for a story. Dipper's insecure about his height. How do we writ that large? How do we make a whole 21 minutes out of that? And of course, it was like, we do a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids episode.
Yeah.
Let's do big stuff, small stuff. But then, like, figuring out what the real story was, because just Dipper's shy about his height, that's not a lot of story.
Yeah.
Like, the idea that Mabel's teasing him because she's insecure about something and that he doesn't notice that, like, that's when we were able to kind of grow it up. Huge props to Aaron Springer, director of this episode. All this whole segment with all these little animals boarded by Aaron in the way that only he could. He has such a sharp eye for visual comedy. And these just weird drawings could only have come from him.
My favorite is this coming up where he...
the mountain lion biting
his finger.
The
mountain lion bites his finger.
Yeah, this was not in the script, biting his finger the way he boards it. This right here is so funny to me.
Yeah.
And I wish
his original drawing.
His original drawing was even funnier. You can't really top an Aaron Springer storyboard.
No,
because he draws like everything's so realistic, like little crow's feet on the side of the mountain lion. Anyway,
so we did feel a little bit, you know, shrinking and growing episodes. It's such a trope. We've seen it so many times. We tried to think of a way to kind of make it our own. And I got to give the storyboard artist credit for this idea of how this would work.
Yeah.
That there's a flashlight that you connect to crystal. The crystal is a natural thing from Gravity Falls, so it's it's not like he's got a laser gun. It's like he's using kind of camping smarts. Yeah. And that when you twist it, it grows and shrinks. And it was very fun thinking of scale gags.
Yeah. And it was that's always so nice when it's like you're like struggling to come up with some solution. The board artist's like, oh, yeah, I got you, Doug. I got you, Doug.
I got you, Doug.
Doug.
You're like, why am I Doug?
I
got you, Doug.
I'm making a lot of mistakes today, guys.
Seuss is, it's so interesting because when you're trying to come up with characters for a sitcom, every character should fill a different role. And, you know, Seuss was a very late addition to the concept of Gravity Falls, and he proved so invaluable just in a situation like this, where he's half kid and half adult.
Yeah.
And so he can get on their level with their little kid problems, but then he can have that kind of adult-like, he's an authority, even though he's Seuss.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, yeah, you're exactly 1 millimeter taller, and you just buy it.
Yeah.
Well, also, I like that idea that he's because he's a handyman and he's, you know, measuring and looking at things.
He's always kind
of
got an answer.
Time. He's
kind of
got that. He's got that eye for that. He can notice that small difference.
I enjoy this argument between Mabel and Dipper. Because at this point in the series, they've encountered enough weird stuff that when Mabel sees this, she's not like, what? You can grow big and small? Huh? She's like, okay, where's the wizard? What do you got? Show me the wizard.
We were constantly making jokes like that. Like, what is it? Some kind of ghost or something?
Like, they're already a little over it.
Yeah.
I like the recklessness that Stan displays here, where he just opens the can, knowing that it will go after Gideon, as opposed to eating his whole house, which was Gideon's evil plan. He just basically helps Gideon, and yet it still backfires on
Stan hates Gideon so much that he would willingly, he'd probably let the shack get eaten by termites just to spite Gideon.
Yes.
Yeah, Dipper only tells Mabel about this because she's so obnoxious.
Right.
Gimme. another great, Brad Breek action-adventure cue where he makes the whole thing a little bit more interesting. We never saw this caterpillar again. I was always like, we got to see him in the background. We got to see him in the BG. Continuity, guys, but we never found a spot for it.
It's too bad. I mean, how long do caterpillars live?
I mean, in Gravity Falls, they can live as long as we want. Normal hand karate chop, I think that's a... I think that's a Zach line.
Sounds right.
There's some good lines from Zach and I think also Tim in this episode.
This bit where Dipper gets a huge head really made my wife laugh. When I don't know why. I mean, she laughed a lot at a lot of things, but like that was the one that I did not see coming. Delighted by that 1 second of giant head Dipper.
We were always looking for ways to take things that were really magical, absurd, and ground them.
Yeah.
Mabel saying like, all right, where's the wizard? Like, that's our way of grounding. They're real people responding to magic. And we do it visually. Like, Dipper's head growing large. I remember when I saw that in the storyboard, I was like, this feels too cartoony. And so the note was, let's have him smash a part of the shack.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's real. Like, the caterpillar going off the distance, the note is, let's add a car alarm in the background.
So it crushes cars.
Can we add something? And even this, like, cut to how little the laugh is.
Right.
Like, can you ground it?
Yeah. Well, and that was one thing we're always trying to do with the writing and the boarding, which is, like, can it either be observational, like, this should look exactly like a, you know, a bad used car lot, or can it be totally... a totally new thing, like either observation or innovation, because otherwise you're left with like cliche and you're doing the same things that every other cartoon show has ever done. So you're always trying to either draw from life or invent something new.
Yeah, and you know, and you don't always get there. Sometimes you fall short of it. Gideon's mom. So like, this is something where anytime we meet a character for the second or third time, if they're a main part of the story, I want to get to know more about them.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a really important thing that if this is their second Gideon episode, we got to go to his house.
Right.
And
something else.
Yeah, because the early conversations were like, oh, it's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids with Dipper and Mabel. They're in the shack and Waddles and think of all this stuff. And then what if Gideon's the villain? I'm like, if Gideon's the villain, this is an opportunity.
Right.
Yeah. Let's see how his house and the car dealership are connected. Let's see his parents. Our thought here was just that, like, you know, Gideon's dad is just this pleaser. He'll give Gideon anything he wants. And Gideon's mom is just in deep denial. I think Mike, that might have been your idea, that she's just vacuuming the paint. Yeah. I think that was actually a gag from one of your student films.
Yeah.
It was like somebody who just, like, can't handle reality.
Yeah, it was right. Like the world was ending. It's like, gotta vacuum!
It's like a Lady Macbeth riff, right?
Yeah.
She can't get her hands clean.
Steal yourself, Gideon. You can use them.
Aaron Springer drawing.
That's the best one. That's the best drawing in the entire series.
You'll use them. That's a perfect example of, you know, like, it's like a fun line that's then like a 10,000 times better by the drawing, and then even better because of Thurup's line.
Thurps. A little bit Thurup of whispered
foreshadowing
lines,
here. I always knew that Seuss wanted to be like Stan, and I'm so glad we were able to pay it off.
Well, and that was such a nice moment, too, because fans really, like, we were, like, nervous about this episode, but fans, like, really loved that moment because it was, like, it gave this character that didn't have much dimension, like, just a little bit of dimension, and sometimes it doesn't take a lot. You just have to show what they want, you know?
Well, Seuss seems like he's a character that's very much living in the present and in the moment, and this gave you the idea, like, oh, he actually is thinking of the future. He has dreams.
Yeah. Well, I think it really helps, you know, even though we were often behind on this show, particularly in the writing. We would go over stories again and again, and we talk about these characters, and we come up with so many alternate plots. But as a result of that, we really knew the characters.
Yeah.
So like a scene like that, where like I just add a little line about him picking up the hat and saying someday, like that's, I'm not thinking like how do I dimensionalize Seuss?
Yeah.
Like we've already had the conversation, so it's natural that it happens.
Yeah.
Like it's just a force of the Seuss that we've gotten to know at that point.
Yeah.
And so to us, it's like we forget that that's a big deal to the fans sometimes when that arrives.
Sure.
Because there's so much stuff that was like developed early on in the series that you don't end up seeing. Like there was like a, you know, a bunch of other tourist trap-y places.
Episodes
that
we wrote that
we
didn't do. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an episode where we had a thought where Seuss, a better tourist trap, you know, tries to seduce Seuss away.
Yeah.
So we've seen them go through unused arcs.
Yeah.
So we know them a little bit better.
Well, that's the thing. Like none of that is really ever to waste because you've gone through the mental work of figuring that stuff out, and it can always come back. Gags can come back, you know,
totally.
But that this, work comes back.
This sequence was all boarded by Nikki Yang, also the voice of Candy, Mabel's friend Candy, and she did a great job with all the scale on these characters.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
We kept trying to think of ways that we could add. We never wanted to lose an opportunity for a gag with the size of these characters.
And Nikki was always like the sweetest board artist. I remember one day she just like came to my office. She's like, "Hey, I saw you guys did a rewrite on the last episode. It's a lot better now." And then, like, I almost broke down crying because I was like, "Oh my god, you noticed!"
You normally don't. Normally, the response is, "Oh, you made a bunch of changes. We're late. What, you think you're a genius?" And for a storyboard artist to come and say, like, "I appreciate your note," like to somebody in like a leadership position, I could see why you almost started crying with gratitude.
I have not forgotten that moment.
Obviously not.
This is a setup for the way that Stan is able to defeat Gideon at the end of the episode. That's a reference to American Beauty. Kevin Spacey throwing the plate against the wall. Like how horrifying! Look at me! Look at me!
He's really a monster. His poor dad loves him so much. There's nothing back from him.
True, he never gets a reward.
So we never in the series do we actually see Gideon's sort of the origin of Gideon. I imagine that Gideon was a talented kid. Like his dad's a salesman, and he was born with that immediate cute precocious gift of gab. But he also didn't really get along with the other kids. You know, he was born with a shock of white hair. He's kind of a weirdo, and that he probably was sort of ostracized. And that, you know, one day while he was just out in the woods, sort of practicing his song and dance, he finds this book that's just like, to whoever so finds this book, there's magic and mystery in this town that will give you incredible power. Mm-hmm. Is there any rival that you dislike? Have you ever felt slighted? This amulet will give you this power. It's hidden here. This will give you this. This will give you this. And so Gideon, in secret, just started amassing all this weird stuff and kind of coming up with his own kind of world domination plan. That's sort of how I always imagined it. And there's references in Journal Number 3 to him hiding one of the journals near an elementary school because he thinks, like, oh, that's safe. No grifters, no right. villains are going to come by here. You yeah. know, a kid wouldn't understand what to do with this, but he didn't count on Gideon. That's the, I don't know if you noticed this, but in every establishing shot of the Mystery Shack in the entire series, you hear a woodpecker.
Yeah.
In every episode. So we finally get to see that woodpecker gets to terrorize Dipper. The Simpsons, every time you see the power plant, you hear, the same yeah. crow as like an audio signature.
Yeah.
And I love that idea.
Yeah, it's interesting because going back and now watching the episodes all in a row, I noticed that. And I never noticed that it was in every establishing
it's
shot.
It's intentional. Yeah.
Before now.
That's right, kids. Steal from your heroes.
Steal from your heroes.
No one will catch you ever.
Feel free to steal from us.
Everybody's been stealing.
Because we stole from someone who stole from someone else.
Yeah.
Quick, get in front and I'll regrow you.
Okay, wait. You're going to grow us back to equal height, right?
Dipper, that doesn't matter right now.
Well, if it doesn't matter, then why don't you just do it?
This, the idea that Gideon is, that one of his weaknesses is his hair, is something that we really enjoyed.
Yeah.
I gotta give Phil Rinda, who is one of our season one character designers, credit for Gideon's design because he's the one who gave Gideon the giant hair. Like, and when I first saw it, I was like, "Is that a little bit much?" But when I saw it in color and it was white and it was so weird, I was just like, "That's so funny and specific," and it ended up being a real asset in storytelling that he could be foiled.
It was, and it's super memorable. It's like based on some psychotic
psychic, This was another nice thing where the little line with him putting on Stan's fez, which both give you insight to his character, also gives you this twist that he thinks he shoots Stan because he sees the fez.
Though he's got really bad eyesight if he mistook Zeus's body for Stan's body just because there was a fez on top
of it. Let's talk about the characters' bodies for a while.
I think we should. Definitely.
Here we have Seuss being a little self-aware. Aww. It's like if he's going to be dumb, he needs to be self-aware. Yeah. Otherwise, he's going to become unlikable. And here's where we reveal the concept. So this actually, me and my sister, the summers we did spend with our great aunt Lois, we were so bored and we had nothing to do but play checkers and play ping pong and play volleyball. I looked through our old journals and she checked tallies. And there's lots of her writing in all caps. Alex won again. Ugh. Frowny face, frowny face, frowny face. And it was like, it was something I didn't know until I looked back at those old journals that was something that drove her crazy.
What's wrong with you?
It's interesting because Mabel seems so confident and so clearly superior to Dipper in a lot of these shows. I like that she has this little bit where she feels inferior to him.
Yeah.
Well, I think Mabel does not have the patience for, like, I think Mabel and Dipper are of exactly equal intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's
but
about
I think
temperament.
That Mabel does not, she's so creative and just does not have the patience for things that aren't fun. Yeah. And I think like Mabel is somebody who, you know, to save someone's life, she could probably get good at math, but for any other reason, she would just blow it off.
Yeah.
There's a lot of these just sort of logic type things that Mabel is like, you know, she's playing chess with Dipper and she's thinking about how cute the horses are and she loses, but she doesn't care.
Yeah.
If she cared, she could beat him, but she doesn't. But she also doesn't know how to care about things like that.
Hey, there you are. Oh, look at this. Look at this
one guy. This is another big laugh from my wife.
You and me.
This was our other big laugh in this episode.
Together again.
Feeling like that.
One of the nice things about the Mystery Shack as a location is that you can make it whatever you need it to be. The idea that, you know, we knew that this episode was going to end with some kind of growing, shrinking. If we have this ray, we need a way to use it.
Right.
And this idea that, okay, mirrors, it'll reflect, it'll bounce. And, hey, it's the Mystery Shack. Well, the Mystery Shack could have a hall of mirrors.
Also, yeah, we came up with this room for headhunters originally, right? This extra room.
This is
that
the parlor.
Wasn't really
it's the room of requirement. We make it whatever we need it to be.
It was just a big, empty room.
You can throw a party here. You can fight a bunch of wax figures here. You can have whatever you need. You can have a maze.
I remember Ian kind of tearing his hair out about like where
where this was,
where this would go.
Just deciding
and
there was sort of
like,
a
okay. It's we know it's in there.
It's somehow down some stairs.
Yeah. Downstairs.
But it's not a basement because there's a window.
Right.
So
but it's
like,
got
don't
little...
worry about it, Ian. He's like, I have to design it. It's like, it's fine.
But once we had it, then he was like, okay, this is where
right
we'll
here,
put everything.
This line for Stan.
I don't even know how to respond to this.
That's a Timmy Keown line, and that has also become a meme.
Oh, really?
I've seen in unrelated conversations on Twitter, on Reddit, when somebody's just being completely nonsense. What am I supposed to do with this? Your comment is so useless. You'll get me one of these days. These are Nicky Yang drawings, I think. Gideon foaming at the mouth.
I really enjoy the fact that Stan decides he needs to give him a pep talk.
Yeah.
Because he's failed so poorly. Like, you'll get me one day. Don't worry about it.
I got it. That's all. Tim McKeown has to get credit for that whole speech. This is all Tim's.
Yeah. I remember, he fits to like him rolling him out.
You're under a lot of stress over the end table.
That's also kind of Tim. He's the sweetest guy in the world. He would talk his villain into.
Yeah, he would.
You know.
Trying like, harder
hey,
next
it's
time.
It's all right, man. He's the sweetest dude in the world.
This is a music cue from, I think, Inconveniencing that we just copied and pasted. I was like, that was a sweet ending. This needs to feel sweeter. Copy paste.
That's good.
And this upcoming bit with Seuss on the ground and he's rearranged the glass to say, please help or help me. like a lot of people didn't notice that. Because there's all these people online that were like, look, a secret hidden message. I'm like, no, that's a visual gag. Yeah. We staged it and tried to color it in every way possible for you hidden. To notice. But I realized like we should have made it more clear because a lot of people saw this and they like they didn't see it. You know?
You blew it, kids. You blew it. No, we love you. Thank you for watching.
We did. This was something where... We talked in another episode about how we came up with Gideon having the journal, but then we realized, well, he needs a mission.
Right.
And we hadn't figured out how it all connected. So this was, we actually called animation retakes on this episode.
Oh, I remember that.
To add the idea that it was the shack that he's after.
Right.
Because we weren't sure about that.
And
at
that
first.
Is not an idea that is in any way even touched in the first appearance of Gideon.
Yeah. We had to kind of work backwards once we sort of figure it out.
We figured out the last episode, I think, and then we kind of tried to work backwards. We're like, oh, he should get the shack at the end of the season.
I do a lot of random announcers in this voice in this series just because we have a lot of them and they're often added late in the game.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is the first time we've seen McGucket eat paper, but it's certainly not the last.
No, yeah, he likes. Well, he'll eat books.
I don't know what things are.